Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Lather Talk. My guest for today is Heather Melton of Zingari Man, and we just had a great chat talking about how the business has grown over this past year, especially in light of the COVID pandemic. We talk a bit about her new expanded workspace. It really is a great peek behind the curtain of the everyday operations of Zingari Man, but what I found really interesting was the insight and the ups and downs of moving from part-time to full-time. I think this is a great conversation to listen in on if you're a burgeoning artisan or small business owner. It really was a fun chat, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Now, on to the episode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Lather Talk podcast. I'm your host, John, aka Lather Hog. Unfortunately, my co-host, Gerard, cannot be here today due to some scheduling conflicts. However, I have a very wonderful and special guest with us today for the episode. It is none other than Heather, artisan behind Zingari Man. Heather, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So good to have you on. So, for those who might not be familiar with Zingari Man, maybe they're new to wet shaving, just finding out what this shaving stuff is all about, could you give us a little bit on how Zingari Man started, you know, what year started and how you got into it?
So I started my first business in 2014, just doing women's skincare, basic soaps and stuff, and started kind of playing around with men's. And the men's products just pretty much took over all my sales. So in 2018, I rebranded, launched in the fall under Zingari Man. And one of my big things, really my focus, was to make a men's line that had more of a focus on skincare. So, I mean, most people, I think by now, like, associate me a little bit more with the skincare side of like shaving and stuff. So that was really what I set out to do. Because I myself have a lot of skin issues. I have super sensitive skin. And I was having a lot of reactions and just super like hyper reactive skin. I couldn't wear makeup. I was like having issues with face washes. And so, you know, just doing research, I started making soap, and it kind of just became a quick obsession. Like, at one point we had 300 bars of soap in the house, and I went to make another batch of soap, and my husband's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm making soap. And he goes, the hell you are. What are you doing? Like, what are we going to do with all this? Hey, start a business, they said. So that's how it started. And my background is actually in laboratory science. And so, and I love to cook. And so this is literally the perfect middle ground between two of my obsessions. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
It's just such a great combo for me with my background and then like my passion for cooking and just exploring new ingredients. It's like all fell over into like what I do now. So that's kind of how I started. And, you know, my first company was Smitten Soapery, and that's not necessarily a very like inviting name for men. So I tried to, you know, find something a little bit more masculine, and you know, I kind of went from there, and that's kind of how I got here, I guess.
Well, I did ask you for, I guess, like a summary, and I know that's like a lot to summarize, especially with a rebrand and whatnot. But so first off, thank you for kind of just giving that little introduction. It's always interesting to hear from our guests, kind of like for them to encapsulate their, you know, like what their history is of their brand, of their business. Because I can, you know, I can read the about page for as, you know, as long as I want, but I'm not going to get that personal touch. So You know, so thanks for entertaining that question for me.
Because, you know, this is the thing with the, especially in like the write-ups that I have, you know, like people just don't read much, or they start to read them, like, and they just, so they don't really hear. So same with like talking with someone, there's always so much more detail because you kind of got to make those things quick and brief, right?
That's true. It's true. And of course, like the opposite method would be like, what's the elevator pitch, right? You got 30 seconds to like, but that's more like selling though, as opposed to like, oh, I actually want to hear more about you.
Yeah. That seems like the ultimate stress, like.
Oh, maybe I should have asked that. Maybe I should have asked that.
So yesterday I did this presentation to a retailer and I had 5 minutes. And I was like, basically told, like, you need to hit these points about your brand, like what it is about your brand that does this and this and this. It was so terrible. I had 24 hours to prepare and I was so freaking stressed. And it was awful. Like I was recording myself on my phone and I didn't even listen back to it just to hit the time, you know, just 5 minutes. And this is, it seems like 5 minutes is a long time, but then I think, and it wasn't, but 30 seconds. Oh my God. And it's like, hey, I make shapes now. Bye.
See ya. Like what is wet shaving? Like, oh no, there goes my 29 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's fast forward then a little bit because, you know, I am a fan of your products and very happy to use them, and obviously tracking kind of the growth of Zingari Man and what you've been up to. And one thing that happened, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's been a couple of months. It seems still fresh in my mind where you moved into a new workspace and basically an expansion. Could you talk to us a little bit about how the move went and kind of where that is right now?
You know, people would ask me, are you making soap in your basement or your kitchen? No, I wasn't. I did. That's how I started. Like, there's definitely nothing wrong with that. That is where I started. But I once spilt a 5-gallon bucket of raw soap all over my kitchen, like, island, the counter, and it, like, went all down my kitchen cabinets. My husband looked at me and he goes, you're getting a workshop. Like, that was the end of the story. So we built a detached garage, and so I had a small, basically it was like a 3-car garage, and I had like one car bay that was like finished out and like air conditioned and stuff like that, like temperature controlled. And so that was my workshop for 5 years, which was awesome. And at first I was like, oh my God, all this space. It was like 14 by 18. I don't know, wasn't that big, but like I had dedicated space and that's all I cared about.
Yeah.
But last year I got to the point to where I couldn't grow anymore if I literally didn't grow. I was like, I can't take on any more retailers. I just, like, every time I had a release, I was like making the products ahead and I was sitting them like outside of the shop, like in my garage, basically, until I had room to put them because I just didn't have room to put them on the shelves. So when I first launched, and some people don't know this, like I actually carried women's products very short term. And then about less than a year into it, I was like, yeah, these got to go. Like, I don't have time. Like, it was kind of like, I didn't want to let it go because it was like my baby, like when I started, you know?
Yeah.
And so I finally I let go of the rope and I let it go. And I was just like, it's fine. But so I did get a little bit more room in the shop then, but I just, with the retailers I was taking on, like every retailer I got, like every new release became more stressful because I was like, oh my God, I got to make more and I don't have room. And so in the fall we started looking and I found the shop I'm in now, which is about 4,000 square feet, which is like, I don't even know what I have before, probably like 400 square feet maybe. If
wow. That's increase.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like the improvement. I was like, I don't need this much room. I don't need this much room. My husband's like, we're buying. You're like, you're going to have, and that was the thing. Like, he's a realtor. So he's like, you're not renting. You're going to have to buy something.
Gotcha.
So, I didn't want to buy something that like just worked for now. I wanted something I could grow into. That's the whole point behind getting like 4,000 square foot. So I don't need that right now.
But, right.
So.
Wow. 400 to 4,000. Yeah, that's
crazy. Like, I literally have an entire building for just storage, and it's like, But I had like a shelf, like a wall before for storage.
Right, right. So, oh, man.
Yeah, it's pretty nice to actually have room to move. And like, it's just, it's crazy. Like the amount of space that I have is amazing right now. It's so nice.
Awesome.
But so yeah, we moved it. We bought that in the fall, and then it was basically a pole barn. Basically, it was basically a porn with like this little office break room area, bathroom, like built into it. And so we finished it out and we, you know, put in ceiling, wall, we covered the floor and all that good stuff. And then we moved in the end of January, February, early February, something, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. It took us a while to get situated and to like, you know where everything was. That was a hoe. Like we had like, you know, when you get your routine of like you're in your kitchen cooking, you can turn around and like grab something out of the drawer. Like, you know where to go. Like, it's just automatic. Right. Like,
yeah,
the workshop was like that.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like when you move into a new house,
yeah,
and then you're like trying to cook and all of a sudden you're like, where the hell is, like, I did that for like 2 months.
So with this really investing in yourself, investing in this business, have your hours shifted? Because, you know, you mentioned, you know, the day job is as in the lab. Has that shifted then, I guess, as Zingari Man, I would imagine, is taking up more of your time?
Yes. So when I moved into the building, I had a plan that I was going to be a full-time artisan by the end of the year. I was going to give myself to the end of the year and let things get situated with like all the new like expenses and just, you know, the growth and stuff like that, and kind of settle into it a little bit. And I just decided and quickly realized that it was really becoming more of an interference than I realized, I think, like I wasn't going to be able to get time off. There was a trade show I wanted to do. And it's not like a hobby trade show. It's like a full blown, like regular trade show.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted to do that. And it's in Vegas in the fall, and I wasn't going to be able to get off. And, you know, I kept thinking about it and I was like, you know, like, this is really, like, it's starting to interfere, like, not just be a distraction or anything like that. Like, it's literally interfering with business. And so, it was a terrifying thought, as I'm sure anybody who's, like, ever went to be self-employed before will tell you. It was a terrifying thought that just one day I was just, like, I'm going to have to quit. Like, I'm just going to have to, like, and I've been in the hospital lab. I mean, that's what I've done for almost 20 years, like 18, 19 years.
Yeah.
And so, I love my job, and that made it even harder.
Sure.
I think, like, if I didn't like my job and I hated where I worked or my coworkers, like, I think that would make it a whole lot easier to be like, peace out, bitches. Like, I'm done. Yeah. But I like what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like, you know, especially like in the fall and in the summer, like when our COVID numbers were high, like, you know, when you work in healthcare, like, it's always nice to know that like what you're doing really is making a difference, especially if you're not necessarily front lines, even though you're like very necessary, like the laboratory is definitely a necessary part of healthcare.
For sure.
But, you know, it does, I don't want to say proud, but comes you a little bit like pride knowing, feel like you were a part of something like important, so to speak, whenever like your community needs it, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So I did love what I did, and actually I left and I put my notice in, and it took me a while, and it was like, it was one of those things that once I decided and I was like, okay, I'm doing it, it'll be fine, I'll make it work, you know, and then like quickly I was like, I don't like this job anymore, like I'm ready to go. And that wasn't true at all. It was just kind of like, I knew, like, once I made my mind up and then made that decision, like, I was ready to move on. Like, you know, that was fine. So I actually offered to stay on, like, if they needed a little bit of extra help.
Yeah.
But I haven't worked since, like, May 1st, and I work, like, next weekend. And I actually just emailed my boss at the beginning of the week. And I was like, sorry, I think that's going to be my last weekend. I don't think I can do this. Like, So, but you know, it really is like, I was working like 70 hour weeks and it just, it's exhausting. And, I've been doing that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And as, even before Zingari like really took off, whenever I was a lot smaller, and was smitten, like I was doing craft shows and like I was traveling to do shows and I was still putting in so much hours. And eventually it's just like, you kind of got to like, as my mom used to say, you got to like shit or get off the pot. Like you got to do one or the other.
Yep.
Like,
right. Right.
You know, so, that's why I was just like, well, the hospital's not going anywhere. I'm leaving on good terms. I'm leaving on my terms. I put in like a 6-week notice. And so, you know, I can always go back if I need to. I mean, they're always going to be hiring to some degree. So.
Right. Right.
That's why I'm looking at it.
But still, though, I mean, you with the building and then obviously this, you know, the shift or the leaving of your job, you're betting on you. And you hear, and they're always really inspiring stories, right? Entrepreneurs and whatever, they're betting on themselves. But it's not obviously with any, quite the opposite, right? There's tons of risk, but.
Yes, it's very nerve-wracking.
So, could you say that again?
It's very nerve-wracking.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's just, yes, you're right. And I think part of that is why I offered to stay on if they needed extra help at the hospital, because mm-hmm. I think it was like a little bit of like that safety chain, you know, like, well, if I'm not doing well, I can always try to work at the hospital, like to bring in some extra money maybe, or, you know, something like that, or I can still keep my foot in the door and then I can always go back like and just pick up a shift or pick up more shifts or whatever. I think it was a crutch. And so, I really think it was like, it's a security. It's very hard. And my husband's also self-employed. He's a real estate agent. So he's right. Literally commission only. And right. So, yeah. So now we're both self-employed. It's great.
I'm sure that's at least a source, right, of like, I don't know, the lifestyle change / yeah. You know, like the day-to-day, I'm sure, like, I'm going to make my own schedule, but then it's on you, right, when it's like the order is not, you have a retail order to fill and it's not fulfilled, like, who in the end, who is it affecting? It's like, you know, it's yourself. So
yeah.
You have that extra drive.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you do. And my husband is very supportive because of what he's been a real estate agent for so long. What he realizes, and like, unfortunately, like a lot of spouses that are married to artisans, like, and this is things I've heard over and over, is like, you know, it is a big leap. And I don't want to say it's a leap of faith. And like you said, it is betting on yourself. And sometimes that's really, really hard to do,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Especially whenever it comes to like your finances and like your living and stuff. I mean, it's a huge leap of faith.
Yep, yep.
But he's always been one to say like, you know, well, you got to invest money, like you got to spend money to make money. And so like, if I, you know, had a big purchase and I was like really nervous about it, he's like, you know what, like, it's what you got to do. Like, you know, it's just how it is. And so I've never gotten a lot of slack from him. I've always gotten a lot of support. And so like, whenever I wanted to buy the building, like, yeah. I mean, I think at my position, I think, you know, there are spouses and significant others who would definitely be like, yeah, no, that's not happening. And instead he was like, well, you're not renting, you're buying. That's my one requirement. So he's been very supportive, thankfully, and pretty awesome. So I really can't complain. And yeah, as far as making my schedule, it is nice to have a little bit more flexibility and not be like dedicated to those, like, even though like I may not go to work until 9 or 10, but I may work till 7 or 8 or whatever at night, instead of like I have to be there from 2 to 10:30.
Right.
But there is one thing, I will not be working any more damn holidays, because I worked holidays for 18 years in the hospital. And so, you know, I will not be working on Christmas Day ever again.
That's good.
Sorry, y'all, but you're not getting soap on Christmas.
Right. You can say the shop is closing on whatever
closed.
Day, 22nd, 23rd,
yeah.
whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And like you mentioned, like, a significant other spousal support is huge. I mean, yeah, whether it's anyone who wants to be self-employed, they get an idea. And how much hard, like, how much hard is it for to convince yourself, yes, this is, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket. And then if you have resistance or doubt from a loved one, like, that's not, yeah. You know, like, that's not, I don't know, it's just making a challenging thing even harder. So, superb to hear that your husband is, I mean, seems like very, very active role as far as like pushing it. Like you don't have to rent, buy, get the bigger space. Don't, like, 1,000 square feet? Like, that would have been reasonable. Or like 1,200, like, let's triple the size. But then no, like, it's looking long-term, because, like, hey, we're going to make it that far. We're going to need that space some point in the future. Right. Some point in the future. Not saying, like, next year, but, like...
Yeah. No, he's funny, because, like, I'll have, like, a release or something, because he's not in the hobby, so...
That's
like,
still, I mean, very unfortunate. You've told me this before.
Yeah, he's not really in the hobby. Like, I could literally, like, he will not change it. He's the soap killer, I call him. Like, he will not change his drawer of soap out until it's gone, and then he'll be like, should I just grab one out of the drawer, or do you got a specific one? So, like, if he tries to grab one of mine that, like, I don't know, like, I'm kind of cherishing, like, I've got a jar of Fenchurch. I'm like, don't touch that.
It'll be wasted on you.
Like, yeah, it's always like, yeah, you're not going to appreciate it. And so we're like, I'll let him use it for like a week, and then I put it back in the drawer so he doesn't, like, use it all up. So, he's funny. But so, like, I'll have a big release or something. He'll be like, don't you need to get to the top of work? Like, what are you doing? Like, I heard your phone go off. I know you got orders to go pack. Like, He's also like the whip cracker.
Okay. That's good. That's, yeah. Yeah. Support / taskmaster. I mean, it's, we need that. We need, we need that, you know, sometimes. Yeah. So that's, I don't know. That's just very special and very good to hear.
Yeah. He keeps me in check.
Let's shift gears a little bit, and there's some observations I made, just as far as, also, I don't know if they came with the expansion or kind of like this up in investment of Zingari Man. So first, I want to mention the labels, and I'm a big fan of these illustrated labels that have been popping up in your last few releases. I know our mutual friend Raza from a YouTube channel, Shaving with Raza. Plug for you, Raza.
Raza's awesome.
He's doing fantastic work. So I do want to mention it's not a very intentional thing, because you had your a very solid template before, right? Where you could just maybe tweak the color a little bit, the font, right, of the name of the soap, like, oh, the Wanderer, the Explorer has little tweaks, but now, like, with this, it's...
That's it. Just different colors.
but it's still something. It keeps things simple but elegant. However, like, you know, going with the illustration, and each tub looks so different. Like, what were some of the factors, I guess, going in that direction for you?
You guys are just demanding. How's that? No.
Excellent.
So when I did The Watchmen, I as soon as I smelled the scent, I literally just had this picture that I wanted to go with it. And at first it was about the write-up. And a lot of people, that was the first time people noticed that I did these, like, big write-ups. And I'm like, the write-ups have always been there, but, like, nobody's ever paid attention to them before, right?
Until now.
And they're great. Like, I have a writer. I don't write them, by the way. Like, I cannot take credit for that. Jackson, if you're listening, thank you, because you're also awesome. And he is. He's fantastic. Yeah. He's a fantastic writer. So I had this vision instantly, and I was like, this is what I'm wanting. This is why, like, and then he did the write-up, and I was like, it's perfect. Like, it's exactly what I wanted. This, like, everything with that project just fell in place for me. 100%. Everything was right on point on my expectations. And I was like, I have to have a label for this. Like, I have this whole concept. I have this whole vision. Yep. Like, I need, this is the one time I need a label for it. And honestly, I thought it was such a unique scent. I really wasn't sure if I was going to go over, but I loved it. And I was like, I don't care if anybody else does. I love it. And I came in contact with Lauren, who did the designer who did that. And actually,
that is a great label as well.
Awesome. Yeah. She nailed it. So, and this is the first time she's ever done like an actual label. And she, I mean, obviously she don't know anything about shaving. She's like a graphic designer, but, yeah, she just totally killed it. And it was also her first metallic label, which is also twice as hard.
Really?
Yeah. It's a whole different concept to do because they have to actually do two layers when they do metallic. Okay. And so it's definitely a lot more challenging to design. And I just got so much feedback on that label that like my tester group was like, you know, there's no going back.
Okay. Right? So just to clarify, positive feedback. I would hope.
But I mean, like even now, Watchmen, like I still like, I mean, I see Shave of the Days off of Watchmen. I launched it, in September-ish, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
Because it was right around hurricane season. Right. That was what my plan was. And, I still sell it like hotcakes. And I still see a Shave of the Day with Watchmen daily. Like, I'm still tagged in it daily. And that my tester group was like, you know, you're not going to be able to like go back to the regular ones now. Right. And I was like, it'll be fine. And they were like,
no,
it's not going to be. Yeah. And then she did Nocturne for me, which was just a really small like collaboration I did with Barrister Man. They did the scent. Mm-hmm. We did the vegan soap base and she rocked that label then too. So I was like, okay, these are fun. They're fun to do. Fine. Okay. So really, honestly, this is the thing is the community and the hobby like really want those, right? But when I rebranded, I wasn't really focused. I really wasn't even in the hobby when I rebranded and focused on this. So like, JR can tell you a funny story. Like I almost had a brand called, I don't remember what it was. It was something like Noble Pig or something like that. Like, and he was like, or hey, it's a Pinky Pig or Dapper Pig or something. He goes, that sounds awfully lot like Noble Otter. And I was like, well, that's kind of a cool name. And he goes, there is a Noble Otter. And I was like,
darn.
Oh. He was like, Jesus Christ, what did I get into? So we still laugh about that. I could have had like the opposite of Cody's brand with that.
Animal theme.
And so I wanted something. Actually, the original labels and like Ben, like this is like probably the same thing with Ben. Like it's about brand recognition. So like I wasn't really like into the hobby at that point, but I kept thinking like if people are in a random store, say you're at Sephora or Sephora, Target, wherever it may be, you recognize brands based on that consistent look, not because they have a different illustrative label for every day scent, right? Like you recognize American Crew because it has the same type, the same look, everything for everyone. Yoplait. I mean, it really doesn't matter where you're at. Like you recognize the brand consistency, right? So honestly, like for the hobbies, I've realized people, but for like larger scale, like really the brand consistency is actually more important. So it's I'm really torn between the two because I am trying to like grow like outside hobby, you know. So it is a catch 22. The consistency of that is definitely affecting, you know, it can affect brand recognition later, which is something I am concerned about. But as I grow, if I grow to where I want to be anyway, you know, if you stay in the hobby, it really doesn't matter. People are going to just know the name, and they'll recognize the label based on, repetitive viewing, you know, they'll automatically recognize the design. Oh yeah, even if they don't see your name on it. But you know, when it's sitting on a shelf somewhere, people don't really, it's not
sure
the same.
Right. So, at a glance you want to be able to be recognized, especially if like one day it's like your local supermarket chain or something like, or whatever, like an actual physical shelf as you described. So then would you say, as far as the illustrative versus the more standardized labels, are the standardized labels still then in use for, I guess, like for your established scents, like the stuff that's
right
year round, right? That's kind of like right. that's the one where we can still like, okay, that's a Zingari soap because I know.
Like Nomad isn't going to get a new label. Wanderer's not getting a new label. Explorer, they're not getting new labels. I actually did just redo Navigator, and it was because I had a really good idea for it. Like,
okay.
And it was kind of the same way. I was like, okay, so I really have a good design concept that I would like to do for that. So maybe I'll just do that one. But no, the others that are in that standardized look, they're not going anywhere. They're going to stay that way.
Okay.
But moving forward, I think at least the majority of them probably will have the illustrative. And, you know, there is a cost and a time.
Sure.
My commitment. I mean, gosh, Navigator just got finished and that took her like 2 months to do. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, it's time consuming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Raza's prompt. Like, I didn't give Raza like props on that shit. But, yeah, I mean, them, you know, because they're doing it like on the side, evenings, nights, and weekends.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Stuff, so,
understood.
You know, I can like take some time, especially if it's a very complex. I mean, when I do it, if I'm paying somebody to do a brand new label design for a full release, I mean, I have like 6 products. So it's an investment. It's not just like the one design for like, I mean, obviously the soap top, the lid yep. is the, like,
the, know, main, the main. Thing. Yeah.
But I also have a side label. I have a splash. I have a soap. I have, you know, the new ones all have beard elixirs. They have beard butters, and I have a fragrance.
Wow,
that's a lot of labels.
Right, right. You got to repurpose that or tweak that design to fit all those products.
Right. Yeah. So it's a lot of work on their end. I mean, it's a time commitment definitely to do a full lineup. So okay. It's also a cost commitment because of that.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No. Of course. That's something that the consumer might not consider. But you want your fancy labels. It doesn't come for free.
You know?
Even to update, like we're talking about the template, like the more simple, I mean, there's a cost in that too. Cause like, unless you got some like mad graphic design skills, Heather, some of those guys tweak, you know, like what's a good font, what's a good color for this new one. Like it's still time and money.
I have a local designer I work with who's really great normally. And so I can say, well, before I started needing like a bigger volume of labels, I could send them a new name and say, well, I kind of want it in this sort of color. And he would match something within that green that would match like the green, the original green.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would send it back to me and he'd be like, hey, how's this look? And I'm like, okay, run with it. Like, and I need, you know, 100 labels. Or whatever it was. So it's not quite that easy anymore, you know.
Right.
It is a little bit more work, but it's fine. I mean, they are fun. They look great in pictures. The brand consistency, you know, some people love Sterling's like consistent look and some people don't, but that's a great example. He is a fantastic example of he has brand recognition from anything.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what he's selling. He's got brand recognition. And it's the same way if he ever upscales into, you know, just say, for example, department stores or whatever, like other online retailers outside of the hobby.
Yeah.
You know, he's got it like on every product. It's like people are going to know. Like that's important. I mean, that's people in the hobby don't understand the value in that aspect of it.
Right, right. The branding, the marketing part, especially in it, right? Like that makes sense too, just to kind of backtrack a little bit, where the illustrative labels, if you're just someone that's a wet shaving enthusiast looking at other shave labels, yes, beautiful illustrative label is gonna pop and stand out from everything else, so of course that'll draw your eye to it. But then for someone who just like, I just want to use, like, what is a shave soap? And you go look, it's like it's nice, but it's like you're trying to like lodge your name and your logo or whatever in their brains. Like, if you like this, please check out these other things that we have to offer. So
exactly.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah. And that's also like, another thing that people don't think about is the amount of scents that you carry. Like right now, I mean, honestly, like in most people in my situation, like we sort of cater to the hobby because you're the majority of our customers, right? Mm-hmm. Is the wet shave community. So when it comes to like fragrances and when it comes to like new scents and new releases, I mean, like more established brands who are a little bit more like not a niche so much, mm-hmm. they don't do 15 cents a year. You know what I mean? Like nope. They do like maybe a spring release, maybe a fall release, yeah. And then like four standard scents or something like that. You know, I mean, they're not under this pressure to like constantly just do another scent, do a new scent, you know, I mean, it's a lot. It's definitely a different workflow being in a hobby niche than being in like a mainstream like lineup.
Right, right. And that's a really important thing that you hit on where, a lot of the listeners of the podcast are part of the wet shaving community, wet shaving degenerates, hobbyists, whatever label you want to use. And yeah, it's funny how many people aren't aware that like your Taylor of Old Bond Street's, Parasso, and the brands are just, they've been around a long time and have established that, whether just through word of mouth or whatever, it's that kind of fits the model what you said. It's like they need to have their basics. They got to keep it simple. That you have too many in your line, then people are just like, I don't know what to pick. I'm just gonna go for the one that has two choices because I like green exactly. over red, or green or red. I can do green or red. Like maybe I'll do right. both. But
no, exactly. Right. And that's the thing. Like they have what, like 4 cents, 3 cents, or something like that, and then they have like their look is exactly the same except for the color. For mm-hmm. everything, like it's that brand recognition. So it's definitely a difference, but the labels are fun and it's fun working with the designers. Mm-hmm. Because Roz is like, Heather knows what she wants. He's a very nice way of saying Heather is bossy and she's just telling me. Roz is so polite. Once I got something stuck in my head, then I was like, okay, this is what I want. And so then I have a very distinct image that I want portrayed.
Okay.
And so then like, I'm not saying like they can't do what they want or they can't, because sometimes I'm just like, okay, yeah, that looks good. Because sometimes there's certain things that aren't that big of an issue to me. But then the ones that are, I'm kind of like, no, that's not what I, okay, so these are the examples I gave you. This is what I wanted, you know? So it's fun to see it come to life whenever you have like this vision. Because it's not really something I have control of. It is, but it isn't, because I can't do any graphic designing, so I have no control over that. It's not like I can be like, let me fix that for you, like I can other things, you know? So let me just do that my way.
Right, right. They're carrying out your vision, especially if you have a very clear one in your mind. And then from there, you know, it's like, oh, well, we can't do that exactly, but how about this? And
right.
It's a process.
It is a process. Yes. Good way to put that.
Just to backtrack, Heather, you mentioned with The Watchmen. And on the scent side, which is really something I really love in the wet shaving hobby, you got to work with Sean Mayer of Mayer Olfactory. Dang it, Mayer Olfactive, I mean. Also, yes. Chateau Luke's, which I think more shavers will be familiar with that. Can you just go a little bit into that process? Because we're just talking about like with your designers, how they carry out a vision. It certainly seemed like with Watchmen and other scents that have since come out, you have a very particular vision for that?
Yes. So I've been on a journey of learning perfuming myself, but my schedule just went, you know, when you're putting in like 60, 70 hour weeks, it's like learning something new that's so time consuming and evolved. Just not always easy to. So I wanted this dark, stormy aquatic. Like, I just knew I wanted one. I am obsessed with aquatics. I started it last year, and there were a few. Kerosene has a really nice aquatic I love, and Imaginary Authors. And I was starting to blend some of those, and I was like, this is what I need. I need, like, a stormy aquatic that's a little bit dark, but not, like, dirty. And, like, I knew what I wanted. And I sat down, I kind of did a few things, and I was like, I don't have time for this. And I know it's not something like really that I do. So I reached out to Sean and I was like, hey, so do you take, because I knew that like he only does like collaborations with, you know, Scott. So I was like, do you do like freelance work as far as like, and he's like, well, what are you looking for? And I told him, and he was like, okay, yeah, I definitely would be interested in doing that. So it kind of just went from there. And the first one he sent me was like almost there. And I was like, it's got this. And so he sent me a second one right away. And I was like, this is it.
Oh, wow.
This is the one I like. And I was like, I told my testers, I was like, okay, so the fragrance is in. They're like, you're not going to send it to us? And I was like, no, because I don't care. Like,
well, as in like, it was good for you. This is what you wanted, right?
I was yeah. done with it. Like, I was happy with it. And I was like, I'm going to send it to you guys, but I've already told him I'm done. Like, you know, it's a done deal, but like, I'll let you guys smell it. It's fine. They weren't real happy about that. They're like, this is what we're for. But I was like, I just love it. Like, it for me, it hit everything I wanted. It's like not dirty like some could be.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it definitely could have been like dirty or too bright. Like, has the perfect like stormy air vibe that I wanted. It's a little bit dark, and it's not dirty. It has enough aquatic that you recognize it's an aquatic, yeah. but not quite an aquatic.
Yeah.
Like, it hits everything that I want. So that project for me just came together perfectly. Mm-hmm. Like everything about it, like the write-up, the label, the scent, everything was just in perfect unison with each other. So yeah, it's one of my favorite projects. So I love it. Yeah. And I had met Sean before. I talked to him several times. I met him at a spa meet that we did in Louisville.
Oh, okay.
And I had talked to him a little bit. Like, that's when I kind of started tossing around the idea about learning perfuming and stuff. And he was like, oh, hey, let me email you some stuff. So like a few days after the meetup, he like emailed me a bunch of references. And he's like, hey, these. So I had kind of started the rapport with him a little bit. But I really just didn't know where to start, like if I wanted to hire someone to do something yeah. like that. And I had even considered it to be like the second to the lineup, like the number two, basically, to the number one.
Oh, right. Yes.
And then, yeah. So initially it was kind of going to be that. And then I was like, well, no, I really want this label because I have this design. So it was a whole thing. But yeah.
Because
so
otherwise,
that's kind of how that worked out.
Otherwise, it would have just been labeled number two, and you wouldn't like be hitting home that theme, right? Of like, I mean, there's a very distinct imagery. That's what I think really, I'm a big fan of that scent. But yeah, that label, like, it just really completes the picture for that release. Remind me, you've obviously worked more with Sean. What are the other since After Watchmen release? What are other ones that you've worked together on? Or had him work on for you. Whatever the proper phrasing is.
Sean is Merchant.
Okay.
And some people may not know this. So at the beginning of the year or the end of the year last year, like it was not planned, but I had to discontinue The Magician. And it was due to one of the fragrance components being discontinued. And I was like, I kind of wanted to update it anyway, but I was kind of forced to. And so I actually have 3.5 cents ready to go from Sean.
Okay.
Because at the beginning of the year, I had around Christmas time, maybe I had sent him and I was like, these are some things that I'm really wanting. Like, I'm not in a rush for them per se, but I was kind of wanting something to replace Magician sort of quickly because I knew that once it ran out, I didn't really have anything like in its place. And, yeah, so, but because some of them are a little bit darker, like they're going to be released in the fall, and don't ask me the names for them because I don't have a name for them yet.
Noted. Got it. Forthcoming. It's forthcoming.
It's forthcoming. A lot of people by now know that I have a sandalwood that he did because the sandalwood he did for me, and that was because I felt like I didn't have a sandalwood base, and I was like, well, I feel like everybody's going to have sandalwood. Like, so I need a sandalwood.
I'm all for that, yes.
Yeah, so the sandalwood is actually done. I'm not going to release it until like after summer.
Cooler weather, correct?
Yeah, I figure it'll go better for cold weather. Not that it's a heavy, dark sandalwood, but just in general, I feel like sandalwood is a little bit more, you know, cool.
Fall, winter, yeah, but, yeah.
Yeah, so, but when I was playing with the barrel proof, the last two revisions I sent them of that, I sent them one that I had done, and I was like, I wonder what that sandalwood would be like mixed in, like the other barrel proof ingredients. And I was like, so I sent it to them, I didn't tell them. And they were both like, oh, we like this one the best. And I was like, of course you would. Of course you would. So then I told them, they were stoked. They're like, you mean our shit's gonna happen? You know, like part of Sean's working it. Yes. So the sandalwood base.
A little bonus for them. Yeah.
Yes, it was definitely a bonus. So Barrel Proof has the sandalwood base in it. So if you guys like sandalwood and Barrel Proof, FYI, that'll be coming out later. Nice. But they love that. So yeah, that's one. And then I actually have sort of a like a yin yang barbershop coming. One is like a super citrusy, herbally fresh one that will come out this summer. And then one is a darker, slightly spicy, slightly powdery like twist on like the classic, but like modernized. Like they're just polar opposites of each other. And let me tell you, the citrus one is like, I just like, I didn't even want any revisions. He sent it and I was like, yes. I love this. Like I was like literally like really like pulling on my arms and like I made the soap, and then I was like, well, maybe I can put this in a lotion for myself. Wow. Like I was drenching on like everything. It's so good.
Nice.
So I'm actually starting on finishing up that project now. So hopefully like July-ish, maybe, I don't know, sometime this summer. Well, it's still
I was going to say the summer is like fast approaching as of the recording of this video.
Yes, I know.
This podcast.
I didn't have any releases from The Watchmen until number one in Merchant, like in March, I think maybe. And so it was like 5 months. I didn't have any like releases basically. And so they all kept getting delayed. And so now I have like a ton of them like all at once. So now I'm like, I have too many. I have to space them out. Like I can't release a new release every 2 weeks. It's too much work.
Right, right. And then you don't want to like, I don't know, like release fatigue or
oh yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
I mean, yeah, it's exhausting for you guys as well. I mean, first off, to keep up with them, I don't know how you guys do it. I can't even like tell you what I did 2 weeks ago, and you guys can like repeat like everybody's releases that's coming out the next like month.
Google Calendar. I'm not sure. I don't know what other methods people. I don't know what other methods people do. But
yeah, so that. As a hobbyist, you know, are you automatically just more drawn to scents that you think are more complex, or like, I mean, I like with Sean, obviously a lot of people know Sean, but I've worked with like Rirana now, and I've worked with Byron.
Yep.
And so I've worked with a couple other perfumers. Sean's just more known in the hobby per se.
Right.
Not that he's not known in perfume world, but his perfume work is more known in the hobby because he was in the hobby. So are you just automatically, because of the fragrances, more drawn to the like the more complex scents? Or I mean, do you have daily drivers that are like sandalwood? Like, you know what I mean? Just something simple.
Yeah, I think, you know, I am drawn to more complex scents, but I will also say, for me personally, I like a variety. So in the summer, you just give me a really freaking good like citrus, and it could be a 2-note thing, a 3-note thing. Nothing wrong with it, because if you just get the blend and you nail it, I feel like I can appreciate that scent just as much as, you know, a cologne dupe or inspired by that's like 15 notes long. I can appreciate that too, right? If as long as it's done well. But one other factor for myself is uniqueness. So, you know, like a lot of these great collaborations you work with, whether it's with Sean, whether it's with one of the other perfumers, which I'm glad you kind of brought that up because that was on my little checklist of things to mention. But it's great that you're kind of introducing the wet shaving world to these kind of known or at least like indie known perfumers, because I think it's such a great gateway either way, right? Like wet shaving into fragrances, and now with more collaborations, fragrances back into wet shaving. Like I'm all for that, people discovering either of those things. So yeah, so I don't, you know, I'm not consistent where it'll be like, if this is simple, I'm gonna pass it up. It's like, I like it. If I like it, it just smells good, I'm gonna use it. It's pretty simple in that way, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's always interesting because Sean's the only U.S. perfumer that I worked with so far. Mm. And it's interesting to work with other people, because I know Sean a bit on the personal level, so I can also be like texting and be like, hey, so what about blah blah blah, you know, it's a little bit different when you work with someone that is French and doesn't know English, and I don't know French. Hmm. So it's like there's a little bit of a language barrier that you have to get past. And with Rirana, you know, when I reached out to them, I was like cold calling them, basically. I just
really?
You know, I have this thing, like the worst people can do is say no, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Okay, you're not interested. Okay, thanks. You know, I appreciate your time. Move on. It is what it is. Yeah. Like, you don't know. They could say yes. You know what? Rirana said yes, and I really didn't think they would. they never did the conversation.
Could you share, because I think I read or heard a little bit about how you like discovered Rirana. I believe it's through another mutual friend of ours. Could you just go, like, yeah. How did they get on your radar?
So last year sometime, at some point, Dave Cowrie, who I absolutely love, he's someone I've talked to since I was like really new, actually. He posted like a review or something about them, and he just kept going on and on about how great they were. And I was like, something that I've tried to do, because I've really not been big into perfumes before now, and I'm like, I think it's part of like the learning journey, is I'm trying to like just get more exposure, you know. So I've been trying new people and new artisans in a sense. So I was like, okay, well, I'll check them out. And I looked, and they have this fantastic discovery set, and it's like $75 shipped for like 10 3 mil like samples that are great labeled, like great presentation, everything. Mm. And so I was like, yeah, okay. So I got that, and when they came in, I was blown away. I loved it. Like I feel like a lot of artisan perfumers, and it's part of the learning journey, I think, but a lot of artisan perfumers, they tend to have a heavy hand, and it's not as well balanced as like other scents, I think.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're just like macro dosed on certain things, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes I think you can see like the progression in like their learning, you know, like it just becomes more well-rounded. And even with Sean, like if you look at his like earlier stuff versus like the stuff he's knocking out now with Neurofactive, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can see his learning, like progression, mm-hmm. and like the sophistication. Doesn't have to be more complicated, just the sophistication and the blending and things like that. And so they were just amazing. And there was like four in there that I am just completely obsessed with. Oh, I love them. Do you have their sample set?
No. So I actually, a buddy of mine that's local, really into perfumes, he found out, I was like, I really like this scent, and he's like, yeah. Next time I see him, he's gonna pass on to me his discovery set. So I'm super excited to check it out.
Okay.
Shout out to Todd.
When you get it, you hit me up. They have one called Blackwood. There's a spice and oud or something like that, or black oud and then spice and wood, I think is what it is. Those two are amazing. There's this one, there's cherry on top. Anyway, they're so good. There's like no bad ones in there.
Okay.
And I was just like, I wonder if I can get them to make me a scent. Like, I just kept thinking about that. I was like, I wonder if they can make me a custom. Like, I wonder if they do that. And so when I reached out to him, I was like, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, or if you're interested in doing a collaboration, like, I would love to do, like, one of, like, these scents. And they were like, okay, well, what about Coconut Nana's? It's our best seller. And I was like, okay.
Okay, yeah. I didn't realize that was their bestseller. I mean, I'm not surprised. From what I've smelled, yeah, that it's lovely.
Yeah, well, they're in Malaysia too, so if they have I know they have international, you know, mm-hmm, like followers, but they have, you know, obviously a lot of local people, I'm sure. So I'm sure a lighter scent, probably just for their weather and stuff like that, probably just goes a lot better. But yeah, it's either their bestseller or one of their bestsellers. So okay. Yeah, and they're making me a custom scent, so it was a win-win. It was awesome. I literally messaged Dave. I was like so excited. My husband was having, I'm telling him, and he was like, okay. And I'm like, do you understand what this means? Like, how awesome this is. And he was just like, yeah, that's great, babe.
Yeah, no, his energy is great. And just to give him a plug too, that's Dave Callie, Callie's Groom Room on Instagram and on YouTube. He does fragrance videos.
He's busy. It's not like he can do all of my scents. I mean, yep, he has his own scents to make. He's doing, yep, stuff with like Scott and stuff. And I do, I think we have, same with like him and Dennis from C4, you know, we have a different relationship than he has with Scott, obviously. And we are literally like, that was the thing that people were confused about whenever Watchmen came out. They're like, well, it's a collaboration. It's really not like,
all right, right.
And it's easy for like your mind to just go there, but really all of his collaborations are exclusive to Scott. I mean, that is definitely their relationship. That is like, you know, their agreement that they have set up. So it's not really a collaboration. It's literally me paying Sean to make me a perfume, right? I'm contracting him. I'm like, it's, yes, like a subcontractor, just like if I hire a label designer or copyright or whatever, it's the same thing. He falls into that same category. I mean, obviously Sean and I, you know, are friends and we have a relationship, but, and so I know him on a personal level now, but I mean, we're still not technically, it's a little bit different. I mean, nothing is marketed, yeah, under his name, obviously. I do use him. I do know him as the perfumer, and even on my perfume bottles or boxes, he's like his story and his like more information. Like I try to just spread the word about him. So, oh, nice. Like on the bottles, the perfume comes in. I'm like, for more information, you know, like this. I think it's worded something like, this project was brought to life by Sean Mayer of Mayer Olfactive. For more information, visit blah blah blah. So I try to give him like all the credit where I can. But it's not, you know, we are, it's not a collaboration, even though we're definitely working together, because he is doing, his creativeness is led by me. And not that I'm taking credit for his creativeness at all.
No, whatsoever. But it's like, but you are the client and you've commissioned him, work for hire.
Exactly.
However, yeah, I mean, it's right. Your friendship or closeness is like, gravy, where like you said, you can, if you have something pop,
right,
in your head, you could,
exactly,
text him, and, yeah, but you wouldn't do that with like Byron. Well, and there's a language barrier, of,
right,
course, but
yeah,
yeah,
there is a language for, I was like, hey, how was your English? And he was like, my English is as good as my Chinese. And I was,
oh,
like,
no.
Is that a joke? Like,
yeah,
I'm not really sure how to take this. Like,
it's like, I don't assume you don't know Chinese, so.
Yeah, I don't really know what that means. I assume that means no.
Yeah.
But yeah, Google Translate is sometimes your friend and sometimes not your friend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, it's been interesting, though. I will say, like, I mean, I've approached other perfumers that have told me no, where they're like, no, I don't do collaborations,
yeah,
I don't do that, or I only do perfume, or whatever it may be. And you know what? The worst they can do is tell me no, so. Oh my gosh, you want to hear a funny story? So, okay, this isn't really funny. So I am terrified of spiders. This is like a thing that my testing group like harasses me about, but I'm literally like, it's a legit like major fear for me.
Okay.
And my old workshop here at the house, I were kind of like in the county, and I had wolf spiders. Do you know what those are?
Are they
they look like little baby tarantulas, but they're huge, but they're not tarantula huge,
okay,
but they're like
Yeah. They're right. They're not tiny guys.
They're the big beefy ones. Yeah. So I had a lot of them in my old shop. And so if it got late and I was out there working and I started seeing a lot of them, I knew it was time for me to go in because that's when they came out. So I was like, okay, it's time for me to go home. You guys can have it, whatever. But the new workshop doesn't really have spiders. So I was really enjoying it.
Okay.
And like, what is it? Okay. Like Tuesday, I guess. I pop open this box to ship out a wholesale order, and there's this spider like laying flat, like against the inside of this box, right?
Oh.
And I'm like, what the hell? I've never seen a spider do that. So I'm like, of course, this is after I scream. And so I'm like tapping him out, and I kill him. And I kept thinking, that's just really weird, like something about him. So I take a picture of him. And so, like, the middle of the night, Tuesday night, I can't sleep. So I pull up this spider picture and I start Googling it. It's a fucking brown recluse. I have brown recluse in my workshop. Like, this is worst fucking nightmare for me, John. Like, you don't understand. Like, I am terrified.
I'm not sure what that spider is. It doesn't sound good given the name.
It's one of like the two poisonous spiders we have in the state. Like, it literally causes, like, if it bites you, it literally causes, like, your tissue to, like, necrose. Like,
okay. Yeah. Got good. It. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. It's, like, it's actually a dangerous, not just a creepy spider. It's actually, like,
it'll get
yeah.
you.
Yeah. So, like, it will make your ass sick.
It was dead? Or no, it was flat, and then you got to it before it could get to
and
you.
I killed it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, right. I had popped open the box, and so I, like, popped the box down on the ground, and when I did, the box, like, hit him, and it killed him. But
oh, jeez!
I was like, I'm only because I'm scared of spiders. I even looked in the box to begin with. Like, it's a habit for me because, like, out here, like, I would have so many spiders and stuff that, like, I would open things and I would immediately look to see if there was a spider in it. So it's just habit. But thank God it is. So the pest inspector came today, and he's like, "So you got like 7 brown recluse in your glue traps?" And I was like, "What?
Oh my gosh!"
So that's how my week went. I'm like, this is like arachnophobia literally for me. Like, this is like worst nightmare stuff. So it's been a real interesting day. And like, if I'm ever on a live in my workshop and you guys ever hear me scream, it's probably because I saw a spider.
Has it happened before? On a live?
On a live? No. Okay. Thank God. No, but sometimes if I've just seen one or made a comment to my guys, they'll sometimes be like, is that a spider behind you? And the first I would be like, what? But now I'm on to this.
They're just messing with you.
Yes, they can't do that to me anymore. So anyway, that's my tangent. I hate spiders and I definitely hate vermin, please.
Oh, man. No, I'm not a fan of creepy crawlies either, so.
You can handle pretty much anything. Like, give me a lizard, give me a snake. Like, literally give me a snake, give me a lizard, give me anything but a spider. I just don't do spiders. But yeah, so.
Well, thank you for sharing the real dangers of the new workshop.
Yeah, it definitely comes with like its own creatures of known.
Well, I know I've taken up a lot of your time, and I do appreciate, you know, just like spending the evening just chatting about all sorts of things. But just one last question as we're winding things down. Where do you see wet shaving going? Or alternatively, we talked about some things coming up for Zingari, but like a little further down the line, let's say in a year's time, is there any like goals, big or small, that you want to hit with Zingari Man?
Working on expanding outside the hobby, which I feel like probably most makers are somewhat trying to do, but like it's actually been a focus this year. I had two goals, growth and to improve on my scents. And I feel like my scents definitely have, like, I've hit my goals with that. And for what I have planned the rest of the year, I think that it's good. And so I, especially since I've been able to focus, I've only been 100% Zingari for a month, basically. And so I am really focusing on doing things to grow outside the hobby, like a presentation I did for a retailer yesterday that is 100% opposite from a hobby retailer. I'm trying to do trade shows. I'm working on listing on Amazon, things like that. So that's kind of my big goal. I do see that a trend in the hobby is, I think there's going to be younger people come in. I think there is a shift. Yeah, I think that's what I'm seeing a little bit is not necessarily a massive shift, like a whole quick shift, but I definitely see younger coming in. And I can see that on the backside, even like on my purchases and stuff. So I do know that that's happening. And I think that like working on like the labels and like improving the scents in general, like will help bring that in. But as far as the hobby as a whole, I think that, people are focusing on like zero waste better and, reduce, reuse, recycle, blah, blah, blah. So, all those things. So I think that that will help bring in a little bit of a younger crowd, so to speak, who are a little bit more environmentally conscious. That's where I see it going. I had a projection whenever COVID hit last year. People were like, oh, like the smaller artisans are just going to go away. Like they're not going to be able to afford it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't think that's the case. I think they're going to see growth because people are having a little bit more time, maybe a little less. It's different stress, but like maybe less stress in some ways. And maybe time factor stress, as far as like activities and like busyness. And so they're going to have more time to like focus and like bring in their A game for like, kick up everything. And I think we saw that last year. I think we saw a lot of artisans that were smaller, like really emerge a little bit more. And I think we saw some of the ones who were a little bit more well-known in the community, like really flourish because, either they had to or they had time to like really put their energy into it. And there's nothing like giving creative people time because that's when the magic happens. Yeah. So I think that like the growth from that last year is blending into this year for the hobby and for the artisans. When the artisans have time to get creative, obviously everybody benefits, right? Like the artisans benefit because it's their outlet. They benefit because then they have like a return and sales and things like that. But you guys benefit, you get a little bit more choice, you get more like new ideas and things like that that you're presented with. So it definitely goes both ways, I think.
I do want to thank you again so much for both your insight and just even kind of letting us peek behind the curtain, see, what's going on with Zingari. And I just do want to say I hope for just continued success, continued growth, and really that you just max the crap out of that 4,000 square feet of space.
It might take me a bit of a time, but I got a goal, so we'll see. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Heather. You have a good night.
All right, you as well.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Lather Talk. You can find all the links for Zingari Man, Gerard, and myself in the show notes. If you enjoyed what you heard today, you can help us out in two ways. First, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, consider leaving us a 5-star review. Second, if you're watching us over on YouTube, we'd love it if you hit that like button and consider subscribing, if you haven't done so already, to the channel so you won't miss future episodes. Thank you guys again, and we hope to see you next time.